Hello and welcome to The Tips, a new weekly podcast from the DP World Tour. This week is a special one as we will be previewing another major. This time it's the US Open from LA Country Club. As ever, we will have the help of some expert guests who will be diving into the facts and figures to provide some insight into where the value may lie. Before we start, it is important to note that this podcast is aimed at listeners aged 18 and over. All odds were accurate at the time of recording, and the betting information is aimed at a UK audience only. Please remember to gamble responsibly, and for more information, visit begambleaware.org. Joining us again this week, we have freelance golf journalist Matt Cooper and odds checkers Niall Lyons. Niall took the week off last week, deservedly so, nothing from him. And Matt very nearly pulled the trigger on Anne Van Dam, but decided against it. However, for the tips, we did get some money back each way on Tyrrell Hatton, who was tipped up by Tom Jacobs in the Canadian Open. And joining those two guests, we have a debutant, a special guest joining us from the ground at LA Country Club. It's staff writer at the PGA Tour, Ben Everill. Welcome, Ben. And I hear you've recently been lucky enough to play LACC. How was that experience?
Yeah, thanks, Oliver. Yeah, we had a media day probably about a month ago and got to whack the ball around out there and see what this place is about. You know, I won't give away my score, but it wasn't certainly as good as what these guys all have out here. And I've noticed this morning going, having a little look, they've grown the rough up a little bit significantly over that last 4 weeks, so making it a little tougher for the guys out here playing the US Open.
Okay, brilliant. Good to hear. I'm looking forward to diving into a bit more about that after your we've sent you out early for a walk, which hopefully it won't change the guys' picks. I'll say you describe something totally different to what we've read online. But let's get into this week's action from across the pond. The field this week is as strong as ever, with the top players all heading out to Los Angeles for the third major of the season. Matt Fitzpatrick comes to LACC 12 months on from his incredible maiden major victory over Will Zalatoris at Brookline. And the US Open is being held here at LACC for the first time in the tournament's 128-year history, with it being the first US Open held in the city of Los Angeles for the first time since Ben Hogan's victory at Riviera all the way back in 1948. The almost 7,500-yard north course will be playing host to this year's championship. It is brutally long as a par 70, and as we've seen on social media, features a 290-yard par 3. Ben, you're out in LA and have played the course, as mentioned in your media day. What sort of challenges are the players going to face this week with the course?
Well, definitely they've put some luscious rough around those greens, right? So if you're not accurate both off the tee and more importantly into those greens, you're going to have a buried ball and just hope for some luck and hacking it out, doing your best from there. So it's going to favor the ball strikers like a US Open always does. If you can find the fairway and therefore then find the greens, you're going to be in good stead. If you don't, you better have your absolute A-plus around the green game. Otherwise, you'll just get lapped.
Okay, well, there you go. Sounds very much like all the US Open we've become accustomed to. They like a score of even par doing the job. And Matt, obviously, how difficult is it for you to decide to back during a week like this when there are basically no players who have ever had competitive professional rounds here? Are there any courses that you've tried to compare it to in the area or in the country or anything like that?
Well, I think that's one of the tricky things. I had quite a long chat with Jeff Hall, who's the managing director of Rules and Open Championships at the USGA, and he's basically the man who set the course up. And it was a fascinating chat, but it also just gave me a lot of insight into the fact that this is going to be quite a weird Californian US Open, because grass is always a very important factor when you go to California. Now, when the PGA Tour goes there early in the season, there's a lot of talk about Poana on the grass, on the greens, which is a very sort of frustrating grass for a lot of people to putt on. A couple of people have got very good patient games on it, and they thrive as a consequence. But then tossed into that, when they go to Riviera, you've also got the added complication of Kikuyu grass, which you don't get at Pebble Beach and Torrey Pines. And then you get yourself, as Ben said, to LA Country Club. And the big difference here is it's pure bent grass on the greens, and then that Bermuda grass on the fairways and around the greens and in the rough. And that's a completely different kettle of fish. So when sometimes you look and you know that this course was designed by George Thomas, as was Riviera, you think there are going to be parallels, and there are parallels to some degree, but there's also quite a lot of differences. So it's a subtly strange and difficult Californian test this week. And then I think there's other things that are quite unique. And one of them is, when I spoke to Jeff Hall, he said the big thing here is the half pars, which seems like a really odd thing to say. But it comes about with that business that you've got the very long par threes. You've also got a short par four at 330 yards. And it's almost as if players have got to sort of create a par of their own around the golf course. And I remember a few years ago, I spoke to Yanni Zeng when she was at the height of her game and she played Roel Birkdale. And she actually literally tore up the scorecard and recreated it for herself. And actually, she went on to win that week. And I think somebody who's got a very smart strategy like that this week is going to be in a great state of mind. But of course, the difficulty for us is knowing who that person is.
Yeah, absolutely. Interesting. So you can accept the four on the par three, but no, you've got to get a three on the par four. Well, there you go. Well, so we know a bit about the course then there. Niall, what are the sort of stats and leaders in areas that you'll be looking at? I mean, we've had the standard video of the rough from the green that we get every single time with the US Open. Anything else that you're really putting a real focus and premium on in your tips?
Well, I think it's worth noting we've often seen those videos from the side of the fairway as well, which we haven't really seen this week. It appears to be that there's a fair bit more room off the tee than what we've seen at previous US majors like this. And I think the players will be granted some grace to miss some fairways. Obviously, if you miss them by far, you'll land in these barrancas. But certainly, I think that plays into more of the short hitters' hands, if anything, across the week, because I think the more you narrow the fairways in general, the more it suits the bomb and gougers, so to speak, and the likes of Bryson DeChambeau and Brooks Koepka, even though Bryson's one of my fancies this week. But the firm and fast conditions will also help those who don't hit it the furthest week to week. So it's hard to rule many players out here just on the face of it. Another aspect will be the slopes on the fairways. There's plenty of slopes and elevation changes throughout this course. Often it reminds me a fair bit of Augusta. And then when you look at another Thomas Design Riviera, we know that the correlation between form at Riviera and Augusta National, that has always played out. So I wouldn't be surprised if there's a few who excel, especially from tee to green around Augusta, that go well here again this week.
Okay, great. Yeah, sort of a bit of a spoiler alert there on one of your picks, which we'll get to shortly. But Ben, I saw you nodding ferociously throughout that. Is that right on your walk? Is that right? That off the tee, it maybe is a little wider and more generous? And is Augusta or any other similarities you've seen on or this season or any season?
Yeah, Niall's 100% right there. Like, there definitely is not as – the rough off the fairways is not as deep as it has been in the past. There is a little bit of a chance you could get a lie off the tee. A little generous. There's definitely some slopes. Some holes already have the netting out because every player is going to end up in the same spot. I'm thinking of 10, 3, I think, is another one off the tee. There's a few of them where it's going to be dodging divots is going to be the hardest part for these guys. Look, one way to describe it for me, being an Australian, as you can hear in my voice, is it has a sandbelt look about it until you put that rough around the greens. Like, if they took that away like it was supposed to be designed, it would look like a Melbourne sandbelt course and would be able to play it somewhat in that degree. However, with the added elevation you spoke to of an Augusta National. So it's sort of a hybrid scenario that the USGA has doctored up here, but definitely more leeway off the tee, as Noel mentioned, than perhaps other US Opens, just none going into the greens.
Could I just throw a question at Ben?
Yeah.
Having played it and being on the site, I just wondered about... although Max Homa has chatted about you can play shots along the ground into greens, there's quite a lot of good aerial footage of the greens. And I was thinking that a few of them looked quite difficult to me, that you, in terms of landing them, if you don't have a high ball flight with kickoff areas, and you needed to carry over sand traps, and then the greens are quite shallow. Is that going to be a feature when it comes to approach shots?
Yeah, I think there are a few holes, what Max is talking about, where, as I said, it has that sandbelt feel where there is a straight, narrow way up. But if you're in the wrong position of the fairway, the wrong side of the fairway, or not in the exact right position, you can't do that. So, and again, that becomes part of that rough, as I said, that's been manufactured and built around some of those bunkers on the on these greens. Just one is a great example. It's a par five. It's an easy-ish hole for these guys. But if it was how it was supposed to be, you'd have shaved edges into the bunkers. In the front of the left bunker, it is shaved in. It'll just roll in. But every other side and curve or whatever of that bunker is diabolical, 3-4 feet of, you know, just hit and hope hack rough that they've grown around it instead of the shavings that you would see in a Melbourne-style course. So, as I said, it's this weird hybrid scenario for these guys. I think the USGA is trying to protect that par a little bit, because without that, there is a chance someone could go deep here. But now, the way it's set up, I don't think that'll be the case. I think we'll have a similar US Open feel. Maybe we'll get 6, 7, 8 under if someone goes really, really well, but they're trying to protect par.
Okay, so over the weekend we could see some spice added to it, seeing how quick some of the greens look on social media as well. And maybe something to look at there is they've had major tournaments, haven't they? Royal Melbourne recently, Kingston Heath as well, and that Sandbelt mentioned with the President's Cup. So it should be very exciting indeed. Well, with further ado, we'll get into the picks themselves. Before we get into who you guys are actually picking this week, it's time to have a look at the top of the market. Obviously, Scottie Scheffler has been in fine form with 2 wins under his belt this year in 2 of the designated events, as well as running Victor Hovland close at Memorial just a fortnight ago. He leads the market at 15-2 with John Rahm and Brooks Koepka around the 10-1 mark just behind them. And then Rory McIlroy 12-1, Victor Hovland and Patrick Cantlay 16-1, Xander Schauffele around the 18-20 to 1 mark, and then Jordan Spieth and Colin Morikawa you can get still at 25-1, and we will throw in Cameron Smith as well at 25-1 just for Ben Everill to get an Aussie in the top 10 of betting. John Rahm is looking to reclaim his US Open title, having lost it last year to Fitzpatrick, which was, of course, at Torrey Pines 2021. And I am wearing that jumper right now, which is not my pajamas, which has been mentioned a few times before the call started. Thanks, Niall and Matt. Ben doesn't know me in it well enough, but he will next time. And Brooks Koepka is another who'll be in contention here at LACC, having won the PGA Championship just a few weeks ago, and he has made a big habit of winning them in quick succession, as we know, from 2017 to 2019. So before we get to your picks, Niall, are there any surprises in there for you at the top of the market in terms of prices or names, basically, who are featuring pretty highly?
Not many, I have to say, Ollie. The last number of majors now, I think that the major field betting-wise is as cemented as it has been in the last number of years. I think we've seen the same prices more or less for the last 3 or 4 majors now. Rahm's drifted maybe a couple of points from the last one. And obviously Koepka's halved in price from winning the US PGA. McIlroy, he's not doing an awful lot of winning. He's spurning a lot of chances too. Yet we don't see the drift on him that you would hope if you wanted to back him. Even further on down the market earlier this morning, I was looking at Colin Morikawa, expecting him maybe, you know, to drift towards a 33-40 to 1 mark, given his form's not that good. And although he plays in California this week, we're still not getting the drifts that you would hope for. And then you've got some Englishmen as well, obviously showing a lot of form last week. Of their prices certainly condensed over the last couple of days. Max Homa would be the interesting one. Obviously there was 50-1 available earlier on in the year, and I know a few people who managed to get a few dollars on that there back in January or February time. And he comes here around 25-28 to 1 this time. And he too slightly has gone off the boil from what he was earlier on in the year, but obviously his credentials in California are absolutely huge. So his price remains as you would expect, but I think his recent form would suggest that he should be slightly bigger than that.
Yeah, okay, there you go. It does feel a bit like the bookies also don't know too much about the course, and it's sort of in order of world ranking, really, for a lot of those odds. But Matt, was there anyone there who, and of that list that I read out, that you think should be considered a bit of a heavier favourite or odds that surprised when you first saw them come out this week?
Well, I think Niall's bang on that it feels like we're looking at the same prices, major in, major out. And I almost feel like there's a little element of fatigue when you're looking at them and just like, well, where do you find your edge? Because it's becoming more and more difficult to do it. I mean, I came very close this week to really liking John Rahm. I think the quirkiness of the course reminds me of what he says about Irish courses. When he did so well in the Irish Open, he said he finds the Lynx courses there a little bit peculiar, and I think he might find that quirkiness to his liking this week. And also, if you look at approach shots above 200 yards, he actually does quite well in them. Whereas, quite strangely, Scotty Scheffler actually sort of his approach shots almost sort of degrade over 200 yards. So I came close to thinking I'd go with Rahm, and then I kind of respect the fact that Patrick Cantlay is getting better at majors. I'm still not convinced he's totally getting better around them, but he's also played the course quite a bit. But in the end, I didn't pull the trigger on either.
Okay, good to hear those names mentioned, though, especially so the jumper gets mentioned as Rahm obviously won that one in 2021. But we have heard Max Homer. He is everywhere online, Ben, at the moment, just because he holds the course record around the North at 61. He hasn't had a great start to his major career, really. But do you think he is someone that could sort of break that habit at somewhere he really thrives? Like, how much will emotion play into this? And a crowd will clearly get behind a very likable character.
To be frank, I think if he doesn't, then he might never. You know, like, he has not played well in the majors. I think it's, 15 majors, no top 10s, never sniffed it at these events. Definitely, obviously, is a California king, 6 PGA Tour wins, 4 of those in California, 2 this season on the PGA Tour in California. But I worry he might put a little bit too much pressure on himself here this week. One thing he's got going for him is, I think, second on our tour in par 3 scoring. Obviously, there's bunch of par threes here this week, but in saying that, as we spoke about earlier, some of those are longer than he ever has to play normal, and if you want to go to those long approach shots, there's other players that are ahead of him. So look, I understand why people jumped on him when he won at Torrey Pines earlier this year, but I do not have the same gung-ho confidence that I would have had at that time.
Okay, yeah, great to know. And as you say, the par 3 scoring might be a bit of a misnomer. We sort of need approaches 250 to 300 is what we need to be, short par 4 stats. But good to know. And he will obviously be very popular indeed this week. But guys, I think it's time to get in to your tips. Beautiful. So we're going to start off with Matt Cooper. Can you please launch us in to the first name that we should be looking out for this week at LACC?
Yeah, I'm going to go with Canada's Corey Connors. In the end, I've echoing back to that thing I was saying about a little bit of fatigue about people at the top of the market. I respect lots of their chances, but I'm not convinced that there's a lot of value with them. Connors, I kind of respect the fact that this guy hits a lot of greens. There was a great quote he came out with a couple of weeks ago. He said, "I feel like my personality is pretty boring and I try to be boring on the golf course." I mean, I think that's an exceptionally unfair thing to say about himself. But I think boring could be really good this week on the golf course. And I think if he has those sort of quite conservative estimations about what he's attempting to do, I think it could really, really work. And in actual fact, if you look at greens and regulation with the approach from over 200 yards, he's first on tour. So that kind of bodes well as well. And then I'm a big fan of golfers who have recently contended in the majors. I think I mentioned this ahead of the USPGA. I kind of call it base camping, because mountaineers don't go to the top of Everest in one go. They go up to base camp, they move up the mountain, they come back down, they test the thin air and get used to it. And I think that tends to happen. 23 of the last 25 major winners either finished top 8 or had been in the top 4 with 18 holes to go in the 3 majors ahead of their victory. That's quite persuasive for me that that's what it takes. I mean, it's blindingly obvious that John Rahm and Brooks Koepka do it a lot, but people like Danny Willett did it and a lot of people forget it. Now, Corey Connors, of course, he was banging contention at the PGA Championship and he's done stuff in other major championships. He's got 3 top 10s at the US Masters. He was the first round leader at the PGA Championship 2021, and he was 4th with 18 holes to go at the Open in the same year. He also said he learned a lot of lessons when he was in contention at the PGA Championship. He was a winner in Texas this year. I think there's quite a lot going for him, and I think he's one of the people who's got those ticks, and he's the right side of 40-1. So yeah, he's my first pick, Corey Connors of Canada. And maybe he will be inspired by watching Nick Taylor last week. I mean, the flip side, I think that sort of stuff is like a little bit hit and hope, but it's a possibility.
Oh, absolutely it is. And he said the right side, he's still 60-1 available for him, for eight places in place. So that was 1 point each way. And as you say, he started very well in Canada before a challenging weekend, yeah. But he was right up there in a course that maybe didn't suit. And yeah, greens in reg machine, but also a rough proximity stood out for me as well. So around the greens could be something to look out for there. So beautiful. Corey Connors, the first name off. Ben, the first ever pick debut. Big moment. Who are we going for to launch off your career on the tips?
Look, I'll go to a guy I think is a little bit of value from your side of the pond, guys. I'm going to go with Tyrrell Hatton. I think that there's one thing I want to get out of the way first. He is not great at the 200-plus yards stats on tour, but I'll say this. I went and looked in to the trends on the PGA Tour stats and the US Open over the last 4 years as my base. And I literally came down to only five names that can win this from the tour side of things. And he's one of them, and he's got the best odds. So basically, players needed to be inside the top 10 leading in, strokes gained off the tee. They needed to be the top 20 tee to green. They needed to be inside the top 25 total. And he hits all those for me. So as I said, we've got to worry about making sure he's a little bit more accurate maybe in some of those longer approach shots. And also, he's got to keep his head on. Now we got to make sure that when he gets one of those bad lies, he's going to get a bad break. If he can keep it, reasonably calm and only chastise himself a little bit, that's where I saw some value. As I said, I've got a five name shortlist. He's on it, and he's got the best odds of those.
Brilliant. Yeah, he is 30-1 for eight places. So that was 2 points each way for Ben. And yeah, the maturity bounce back thing has been mentioned a few times, but it was pretty impressive last week from 72 back with a 64, 72. And on Sunday, we saw a double on 8 or 9 and then came back with 5 birdies last 6 holes. So it's exciting to see that he is showing that side and what form he's been in.
I think too, he was somewhat playing within himself last week. He knew that this week was coming. I think that, he was sort of keeping some gas in the tank. He was mindful of what was coming up. And with that in mind, I feel like, the best is still to come, because definitely there can be some fatigue for guys who play a lot. But it seemed to me like Tyrrell was planning ahead as much as trying to win last week.
Yeah, good insight that, absolutely. And people have said if he plays 4 rounds together, he wins a few of these events in recent weeks. He just needed 3 last week and would have got the job done, to be honest. So Tyrrell Hatton 30-1 there from Ben. And Niall, can you round us off with your first pick there? Thank you for this week.
Yeah, I'm going for one of the obvious ones too, only not the first couple in the market, in the shape of Victor Hovland. Just like Matt, I'm a massive fan of anybody who's played well in a recent major championship, and it's the sole reason why I backed him in the Masters after a disappointing final day at St Andrews. And I got off the train at the USPGA, and I was very nearly punished for that. And at the PGA at Oak Hill, he was much, much better than what he had been in the final rounds at St Andrews and Augusta. And I think, as Matt says, that's just a sign of getting used to the air, as he calls it, used to the climate in the final couple of groups on a Sunday in a major. And, Koepka had a bad round there at the final round of the Masters, learned from it. Obviously, Brooks Koepka's a different animal, but Hovland is now showing those stepping stones towards landing that first major victory. I went at Muirfield Village last time out as well. His first win in mainland America, so to speak, as well. So that's another feather in his cap. I can't just quite have Cantlay along the same price at around 16-1, given that Hovland has contended these last 3 major championships now on the trot. And I think he holds all the aces. And he coped just so well at Oak Hill compared to what he had done. I had him back to the Masters, and he held, about a 15-footer on the first for a par. And I thought, here we go. This is him learning from St Andrews. And I think he held about another 12-footer on the fifth for a par. And then it just kind of went to pieces after that. And I was really, really surprised. And that's why I didn't back him at the PGA, simply because I didn't know whether he was coping well enough with the situations. He didn't learn enough from St Andrews the first time. But it was much better at Oak Hill, and bar a bit of bad luck on the 17th hole with the bad lie in the fairway bunker. Obviously, if he had a good lie in that bunker, that shot was going to be very tough as it was. But the ball was slightly sitting down, made it even harder. So to match Brooks Koepka all the way there at Oak Hill, given the golf that Koepka played, was just phenomenal, and was quite impressed with his course management that day as well. So Yeah, especially after winning at Muirfield Village too. I think he has to be the play at 16-1, given Cantlay is the same price.
Yeah, great. 16-1, that was 3 points each way. I did see now from the rough sort of 100 to 175 yards, pretty much a top five for all of those iterations distance, which could be big. And was there a bit, and we saw this at Oak Hill, obviously people talk a bit about Victor Hovland, chipping and around the greens can't always be at the top level it needs to be. But Oak Hill, because the rough is so big, like it is here, it's sort of a go hard and gouge. There's less finessey touch. Do you think that absolutely that will help his game this week as well?
Yeah, absolutely. That levels the playing field and bridges that gap somewhat from what he has from the best players in those departments. But it's also worth noting that Hovland has gained shots on the field around the greens in 9 of his last 11 majors that we've got the stats for, which is quite hard to believe given the narrative that you read about Hovland. His short game is slightly getting better, and it has been better on the PGA Tour this last couple of weeks. But especially in majors, just like about a year ago when the narrative about Salah Torres couldn't putt, and his horrific putting stroke, but yet in majors, you know, he was in top 10, top 5 putting stats for the week, you know, regularly enough, and nearly winning them, of course. Hovland ups his game around the greens for the majors, so I'm just hoping for the same again this week.
Okay, yeah, he's just loves more challenging greens and complexes, clearly, Hovland. He waits for those moments. I can see Ben nodding throughout that. Maybe we've talked him into a bit of Hovland action, and he is a strokes gain machine. All those stats mentioned by Ben, he ticks those. So that was 3 points each way.
He's one of those five, that fit that bill that I spoke about earlier. And look, just a little bit of, I guess, personal touch. Being around Hov, he's got an Aussie caddy, Shay Knight, so I'm around the Hovland camp a little bit. He was gutted after the PGA, and normally we see the smiling Victor and everything's all hunky-dory even when he loses. Not this time. He walked away angered, annoyed, frustrated, and it was a good thing because it turned him into a machine coming into Muirfield Village. And look, he's been working very hard on that short game, as you mentioned, but also just his strategy. He's not firing at as many pins. He talked about how his coach and he have figured out not to take the aggressive shots, and he saved 2-3 shots a round just by changing his strategy into certain holes, hitting the middle of the greens instead of getting too aggressive. So, yeah, you won't talk me out of someone who picks Hovland. I won't talk them out of it.
Yeah, brilliant. As you say, we mentioned Rahm with Ireland, the Scottish thing. He obviously played well in Scotland with the Lynx factor. So could be something there. And he loves that driving iron that he hit pounds through the fairways, which could come into action. So that is Hovland. And that gets us on to our second outright tips. And Matt obviously opened with a 60-1. If we know Matt Cooper, this will be probably double those odds. Who have we got, Matt?
Well, lots of us like the English golfers this week, and they did very well last week. But I'm going for a kind of left field Englishman in a fellow whose name's English, Harris English, who I think is actually just a little bit too big this week. He's a fellow who's played 7 US Opens and he's never missed a cut. He's twice finished top 4. So I kind of like his game in that regard. And then he was a top 20 performer 2 years ago. Injury sort of wrecked his form. And I think he started to come back into form this season. He shot 61 in round 1 at Riviera at the start of the season and 65 in round 4 as he got 12th. He was second at Bay Hill, third at Quail Hollow. He was banging contention at Colonial a couple of starts ago. I like the way that he's playing good golf at places that might fit well for here, that you know, tough tracks, major championship hosting golf courses. And he himself said, my game's trending in the right direction and I like courses where par is a good score. I think if you put all those things together, I think that the fact that he's actually missed a lot of cuts around all those good performances means he's a little bit hidden in terms of his form. But I just think if you put his best stuff and his potential in the US Open against his price, I think there's a little bit of value there. So he's my second pick.
Okay, brilliant. He's still available 10 places, 125-1. And one thing we haven't mentioned too much, I don't know if you put a premium on this, Matt, was his putting. He pretty much leads or is second in everything. And these greens look pretty electric. Was that, and we haven't mentioned too much, was that a bit of an interest for you, some of these tough complexes?
Yeah, I like all of that stuff. And I mean, it's interesting that Ben mentions strokes gained off the tee and tee to green being vital for US Open champions. I had a little look at something similar. And because it's one of the great It's one of the a little plug for the PGA Tour stats pages. It's the fact that you can actually look at what state the stats were in ahead of a golf tournament is a fantastic facility, I think. So I did something similar to Ben. I like looking at the stats, but sometimes I also just like looking at the sort of where somebody succeeds. And English is somebody who I think is kind of phlegmatic personality sort of enables him to sort of play well in those tough places. It's also quite strange how I tend to think he's in his late 30s and he's not that old. He actually achieved quite a lot at quite a young age. He's like a sort of sneaky young performer. I think he's 32, which just seems quite extraordinary to me. But I think there's a big gap between his potential and his price, and that's one to snap up. That's where the value lies.
Yeah, great. And those results he did well at. Charles Schwab, he obviously struggled on Sunday, was only 3 under, but that was, you know, for tied 12th and runner-up at Bay Hill, he was 8 under, winning score wasn't much better than that. So, interesting to keep an eye on him. So that was, 125-1, 1 point each way for 10 places. Some nice odds there. And we'll come to you, please, Ben, for your second and final outright pick this week.
All right. Well, look, Matt earlier was talking about Corey Connors calling himself boring. Well, another man that everyone thinks is boring, and this is a boring pick at the top of the board. But Scottie Scheffler is one that I want to leave him alone, but I can't. And I'll tell you why. He is the last few tournaments hitting at tee to green better than we've seen anyone in a long time. It's ridiculous how well he's hit at tee to green. Both that his last two tournaments, he could have made one more putt and he would have been in a playoff, and he finished dead last in strokes gained putting in both of those two events. He was hitting it that well. In fact, had we put Denny McCarthy's putting stats at Muirfield Village with Scottie Scheffler's actual tee to green, he could have won the tournament by double digit shots. That's how well he's hitting at tee to green at the moment. Now, because we only need to see him make one or two more putts to be a massive contender, that's why I'm still showing value there despite the horrendous putting over the last few weeks. I think that when it is tough like this, hard and fast, similar to when like Augusta is running at its best, it's almost like everybody's struggling and it brings the field back like we mentioned earlier. And I think that he'll be able to adjust enough to ride that ball striking. I mentioned those stats that the last four champions in this tournament had coming in. They had to be inside the top 25 strokes gained total, had to be in the top 10 off the tee and the top 20 tee to green, those three core stats. Well, Scottie Scheffler ranks 1, 1, and 1 in all of those. So, yeah, make one putt, he's in the mix. Make half as many putts as the field average, and we could have a dominant victory here. That's how bullish I think he could be if he gets it. And it'll come down to that. You know, he's going to have a 3 or 4 footer early sometime in this tournament. He makes it, I think he's away. He misses it, then we have to worry about him a little. But it'll come early for him. He'll figure it out. If he makes it, we could be watching a boring finish here because he could streak them.
There we go. Okay. And some of those stats out of Moore were crazy. I think it was 20.7 strokes tee to green gain. Next best was Siwoo at 12. I saw your tweet there, and he was minus 8.5 for putting, whereas Denny McCarthy was just over 11. So, I mean, it's some differentials of 28, 29, which obviously is the biggest since records began that we've seen there. So he is still 7-1, and that is 3 points each way from Ben, tip two there, and that's 8 places for Scottie Scheffler to just keep the good form going. And finally, we've got Niall, your second tip, please.
Yeah, it's Bryson DeChambeau. Once again, another player who played well in a recent major. I was quite keen to take Bruce Koepka on when he was in the final group at the Masters, simply because of the lack of heat in the battle, you know, in the last number of months. And it turned out that way, but it's Bruce Koepka after all, and it didn't take him long to figure it out, and he landed the next one. I don't think that's enough evidence to suggest that these guys from the other tour are going to necessarily be as prolific as Brooks if they get in contention. But DeChambeau kind of stalled on the last day at Oak Hill. He shot level par. It wasn't as bad a collapse as what Brooks had at Augusta in the final round. But nevertheless, he didn't put his best foot forward. But he's got top tens either side of that fourth place at the PGA. And he's hitting it as long as he ever did, but more accurately than usual as well. He's hitting a lot of fairways over the last number of weeks. He's got a win at a very firm and fast Bay Hill back in 2021 when he won back there at 9 under par. It was very fast that week, which I'm sure will play out over the course of the week. But another thing which worth really worth pointing out is the Gil Hans form that he has. Gil Hans obviously redesigned this course, as he did Winged Foot, where he won the US Open. And he also won at Ridgewood and TPC Boston, another two Gil Hans redesigns. So, yeah, everything's going for Brooks Koepka, or sorry, Bryson DeChambeau. And I just think, even though he can spray a few, but I think this venue, it doesn't really suit his bomb and gouge tactics the way he kind of won Winged Foot. But he's got more room off the tee to maybe miss the odd drive here. And if he comes with the game he's been playing in the last couple of weeks, I think he could be a major contender.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he was obviously first round leader with a 66 last time out, and was only in the penultimate group, we forget. But him and Corey Connors, it could have been one of those where they both struggled and it was tough to find any birdies in that group chasing a very impressive Hovland and, of course, Brooksy. And it's been a big week or two in golf as well. So it'll be interesting to see how Bryson backs up after that. He is 40-1, and that was a point each way for him. And you can still get 10 places on Bryson there. So they are all the outright picks. We're going to get into some special bets shortly. But before that, it's time for a quick game of Who Am I? Yes, it's everyone's favourite game. It is, of course, Who Am I? Last week, we got all the way through to the end. No one got James Morrison, even with my tip of his great songs of You Give Me Something and his Broken Strings duet with Nelly Furtado. So a bit of pressure this week. And the first, and it's, of course, someone who's in the field. So the first stat or fact I'm going about them, and remember, just put your hands up and we'll come to you if you ever guess, is I played a US Open as an amateur. Keeps it wide breadth. Have we got any guesses there from the gents?
No. So I might as well want to guess. Yeah. Scotty Scheffler?
That is not correct. We go to the next one. My best finish in this event is the tie for 47th. Ben Everill?
Max Homer?
On debut, he gets it in the second I was trying to stop the conversation about him earlier in case something was revealed, but it was Max Homer. It may have been. The next ones would have been a bit of a misnomer again. My first US Open was in 2013. He played as an amateur after the NCAA win, I believe it was. And then it would have been 11th favourite in the betting market, and LACC is on his home turf, would have been the fifth and final giveaway. But that's right, nothing better than tied 47. I think it was three miscuts. Other than that, and there was a big gap between his debut in 2013. But well done, Ben. We will definitely have you back after winning that to defend your most recent title there. But let's get now into the special bets market, guys, because it's very exciting. You've all picked something quite different here, which is nice to see. So this is where we can look in the market and anything we like, from top nationalities to top 10 to top 40 finishes, first round leader, whatever they fancy. And we've got some different markets in here. So let's come back to you, Matt. What are we looking at here as your special bet for the week?
Yeah, I'm going to go quite boring, but I think being boring is good. It seems to be my theme of the day and possibly of the week. I hope it's not too boring what I'm saying, but you never know. And I'm just going to go with Xander Schauffele for a top 20. It seems like the bleeding obvious, but it's almost as if the tougher the test, the better he gets. So he, this year on regular PGA Tour events, and I've not counted the Tournament of Champions and the Tour Championship for this because it's only a small field, but he's had 8 top 20s and 11 starts over the last 5 years, 54 in 83 events, in the major championships, 16 in 24, and in this tournament, this championship, 6 in 6. Now, that would indicate to me that he's going to be wildly odds on, but you can actually get 23 to 20 on a top 20. So the fact that the numbers are in our favour so much, just makes me very keen to get involved in a boring Xander Schauffele bet this week.
That's great. What is it that, I mean, that they are sneaky, impressive numbers when you think we haven't seen him feature as much. What part of his game is it that's just offering that every time? Are they like the classic Rory McIlroy fourth round 64s that get him into it? Or do you think, is there something else that sort of appealed to you?
I think what happens is when I said at the start, the tougher it gets, the better he is. That in many ways that seems, I don't know, a slightly daft thing to say, but I think probably what happens is He's ready for that sort of test, and he's not fazed by it. And actually, more to the point, lots of people are. So in major championships, whereas some swings and some game plans and some mentalities are going to struggle in those, he doesn't. And also, actually, I think he's just plodding's a terrible way to put it, because it kind of slaps down what he's doing. But he's got the capacity to just keep playing golf and just be there at the end. He's well capable of winning, of course. He won back to back last summer, shortly after he won a couple of sort of unofficial events. So, you know, the wins are within his scope, but he's deadly when it comes to just being on the front two pages of the leaderboard.
Yeah, great. And that is, you say, I think, the first time anyone's ever used the word plod and Hollywood or LA in the same sentence. Just really bringing the glitz and glamour from England. Thank you, Matt. So we've got 11 to 10, Xander, there at the moment, the top 20. And that was 2 points from Matt Cooper. And let's stay with that top 20 market. With you, Ben Everall, you've got another name to throw in and take one of those spots.
Yeah, look, I can't go on any sort of betting show or podcast, etc., without throwing an Aussie in the mix somewhere. And I'm going to throw veteran Adam Scott out there as an option. He is in better form than his season stats suggest, right? You can see that if you just go straight to his strokes gained approach, oh, he's not doing so great. But in the last month or so, 6 weeks, he has been turning up and bringing his best game forward. Also, we talked about those long par threes and long approach shots. First on the PGA Tour in approach shots above 275 yards, T10 approach shots outside 200 yards. And also, when the times he misses and maybe has to lay up or punch out, he is third on tour from 50 to 75 yards. So he can recover as well. Usually putting people think is his problem. Well, he's been improving that as well. 36th strokes gained putting at the moment. And it's just one of those venues that I know that Adam Scott will be up for. I know he'll feel the love here. He'll want to perform on a course like this. And I saw 13 to 5, I think, for the top 20 or somewhere around that mark. And even 6 to 1 for top 10 if you want to get crazy.
Yeah, that's right. 11 to 4, he still is there. So that's 2 points again for Ben allocated there. And the putting one was really interesting. I looked at that and it looks like some of these complexes, tough to get close. He leads the tour from 10 to 15 feet in putting, which is staggering for someone. We talk about Adam Scott and he likes hard courses. I mean, apart from the 75 on Friday at Memorial, he was right up there and still finished with the top 10. So lovely stuff. And of course, it had to be an Aussie, obviously. So there he is. And we wouldn't do top Australian because you can't not back any of them. So that's good. We like it. And finally, Niall, who is it and what odds can we get at them?
It's Siwoo Kim, and you can get 4 to 1 about him 3 places in the top Asian market. Now, there's about 5 Asians at the bottom of this market there who are long, long odds on to miss the cut. So I think you're talking about 4 or 5 really in this market as opposed to the 10 or so that are currently in it. I'll start with Siwoo Kim for a start. He was 4th at the Memorial last time out. He has an amazing touch around the greens. Not many better in the field than him. He's got a win in California. He won the Amex a number of years ago. He's 14th on tour this season from tee to green. He's playing exceptionally well. Of course, he has won it. He has won the Players' Championship at Sawgrass too. So he's won. Not only might he win this top Asian market, he could well contend this week. The putter might be the weakness, but nevertheless, I think this is a market that he can definitely take home. I think there's a slight weakness towards the players around him in the market. Hideki Matsuyama and Sung Jae-im are the two in front of him. I'm not entirely convinced that that Matsuyama's in the best form this year. He's had some injury struggles, but he's only won top 5 this season. Sung Jae-im, after going to Korea and winning in his home country before the PGA, hasn't since missed 2 cuts, and then I think he was outside the top 40 at the Memorial. Tom Kim, the other strong one in the market, he's really gone off the boil as well this last couple of months. He's got numerous missed cuts leading into this tournament as well. So Siwoo Kim is on a totally different plane to those guys right now. I think the course suits him as well. So you can't get 4 to 1. And as I say, each way 3 places, it looks like one of the better each way bets of the week.
Great stuff. Yeah, there you go. Top Asian Siwoo Kim. Thank you, Niall. Well, there you have it. It's a very in-depth preview of the third major of the year. That's it for this week's event. Nothing on the DP World Tour. So I just want to say a massive thanks to all the guests this week. And don't forget, you can follow our guests on Twitter. Ben, as the debutant, can you please tell our listeners where they can find you on Twitter with your handle?
Yeah, at Beaver Golf Bet. You can get me there, or as I said, golfbet.com or pjtour.com to see what we're writing every day. And we're here on the ground, so I'll be doing draws and fades as each round plays out, reacting to the stats and how guys go. So looking forward to it. Big week.
Perfect. Thank you very much for joining. Of course, thanks also to Matt and Niall. Their respective Twitter handles are at Matt Cooper Golf and at Bet Golf World. So please give them a follow, like some tweets, even a retweet if you're feeling very generous and they get you a winner. Matt, also, I believe you're on the handle for someone else to get some late nights working this week on Twitter.
Yeah, I'm going to be doing the live text commentary for The Guardian. So a lot of late, and I'm doing the late shift on that all 4 days. So I'm doing that with fellow guest on this show, Dave Tindall Golf. So yeah, come and join us.
Brilliant. Can we expect any paradoxes in there or now? Any random facts or figures you've kept at the end of the show?
I'll be coming up with a few of my paradoxes and rules and theories. Yeah, there'll be plenty of those.
Here's a random fact. I've never had a cup of coffee in my life, Matt. Not one.
Wow.
I'm glad we got this far into to find out. I think I need one.
There's a barista in the media center here this week. They've actually brought a full-on barista in here, so I'll be smashing the flat whites all week.
Love to hear it. Well, I look forward to seeing everything Ben puts out on socials as well this week. And now it is time to recap all of the picks from our guests for the US Open. So just to recap those tips this week, Matt Cooper got us underway with a 60-1 pick of Corey Connors, 1 point each way. And his second tip was Harris English at 125-1, again, 1 point each way. After him, we had Ben Everill. His tip, Scotty Scheffler, 7-1, good for 3 points each way, followed up by Tyrrell Hatton at 30-1 and 2 points each way. And finally, Niall's outright selections were opened up with Victor Hovland at 16-1, 3 points each way for the Norwegian. And finally, Bryson DeChambeau at 40-1, again, 1 point each way. And then we looked at some special markets there, and Matt Cooper had Xander Schauffele for a top 20 finish at 11-10 for 2 points. Ben, the same market, top 20 was Adam Scott at 11-4 for 2 points. And finishing off, Niall Lyons, top Asian, was Siwoo Kim at 4-1. And that's 1 point each way there for him. So good luck with all of your bets. Please remember to always gamble responsibly. And when the fun stops, stop. We'll be back next week to see if we have picked a major winner. And we, of course, look ahead to the BMW International Open and the Travelers Championship. Enjoy the golf from LACC and see you next time on The Tips.